Okay, hi everyone. Welcome to part two of our seven-part series on You, Me, the Dynamics of Relationships. And tonight's discussion is a tough one. Last week, we spoke about the importance in Judaism of working on character traits. Actually, one of the reasons we are put into this world is to work on our character. And tonight is going to be one of the greatest challenges that we're all going to deal with, we are all dealing with, and that is the topic of anger. And there are two titles that came out for this class. One is You Make Me So Mad, and the other is Mad Men and Women. Mad Men? Great crowd. Okay. Thanks for coming. So we're going to begin our little journey into this tricky subject with something I found called rap rage. Have you ever heard of this, by the way? One of my friends emailed this to me. Rap rage. Now, rap rage sounds like rappers are raging. Yeah, that's not what it's about. But they do have anger issues, by the way. No, this is WRAP rage, also called package rage. So what's up with that exactly? I'm going to wait for this crew to come in. Okay. Ari, could you get the door, please, my darling? So what's that? So basically, you know, you get those like little packages that come with like the electronics in, and you want to open it up, and you start on the edge, on the corner, nothing happens. You move it around a bit, nothing happens. You pull out the little plastic knife, doesn't work. You pull out the big sharp knife, the screwdriver, you jump on it, you bite on it, you get cuts and bruises. So now they have their own term for this, being rap rage, and is the common name for the heightened levels of anger and frustration resulting from the inability to open hard-to-remove packaging, particularly plastic blister plaques and clamshells. Consumers suffer thousands of injuries per year, such as cut fingers, sprained wrists, from tools used to open the packages and from the packaging itself. Packaging sometimes must be difficult to open. For example, regulations dictate that some over-the-counter drugs have tamper-resistant to deter unauthorized opening prior to an intended customer. The term rap rage itself came about as a result of media attention to the phenomenon, although other variants, such as packaging rage, have been used as early as 1998. I've read a good statistic over here. It says that Stephen Colbert did a whole report on it in 2006, and they find that every year, over 60,000 people receive hospital treatment due to injuries from opening food packages. It's like Cheerios, you're working on the top, you rip it off, it like cuts your back, and you freak out, get angry. You don't have this experience, is it something you've had? Has anyone here actually suffered from rap rage? No. I have. My BlackBerry box. So let's have a look at what Judith has to say about this and all the other forms of anger that we deal with, and we're going to begin with a source from the Talmud. And the Talmud says that if you want to judge yourself, or you want to judge somebody else, there are three areas you need to look into. Kiss, kos, kas. Kiss means, no, not the variety, this is Hebrew. Kiss means a person's pocket. It's a kiss, where you keep your money. How a person spends their money says a lot about their character, what they spend the money on, or sometimes what they're not willing to spend the money on. You learn a lot about a person by looking at the money. The other is kos, which means a cup. And what a person is like when they are drunk is very, very telling. If you're dating someone and he starts drinking a lot, or she does, and half of the date they start crying about their mother, not a good sign, right? As the Talmud says, in goes the wine, out come the secrets, okay? So by date 4 or 5, you want to get them plastered. And finally, the other one is kas. Kas is anger. Kas is anger. What does a person get angry about says a lot about that individual. What infuriates them and how they act when they are in a state of anger, getting into an argument with them, for example, is going to reveal a lot about them. It's also going to reveal a lot about you. The Talmud tells us that anger is the inner teacher. The inner teacher. What a strange name for anger. Why would anger be called the inner teacher? What's up with that? Not a rhetorical question. I'll take an answer from the crowd. Well, it teaches you about yourself. What you get angry about says a lot about who you are. If, for example, a quick story. A guy who used to be involved with the JC many, many years ago in our previous location was dating a girl 2-3 times, and he was on a date with this young lady, a professional and a very accomplished individual, as she was. And he said during the date a very strange thing happened. She started drinking too much. By the way, first of all, not a good thing to do. I was only kidding. Do not get drunk on a date, especially the third or fourth one, okay? So, speaking from experience, so I'm okay. So, there you are. And she gets a little bit tipsy, and the waitress brings more wine, red wine, and she's wearing a light dress. You know where this is while it's going. And the lady, by mistake, complete accident, restaurants are busy, slips the big metal glasses all over her dress. He says to me, she completely freaks out. There's no, he said, shouting, get me the manager, like completely loses it. Like she lost in two categories, the cost, the kiss and the cover. So he comes out and owes the manager, you know, they want to have like, you know, return clientele, no problem, meal for free, even offers to dry clean the dress, cover the cost of that. She's not hearing it. She just wants to vent and vent and vent. And then, whoop, she's back. Okay, so let's carry on. And they leave. And she's okay, so I'll see you again. And he was like, yeah, I don't think so. Why? Because you completely crushed that poor girl. Like, I can't believe you did that. You had no remorse. This poor girl, like, she's lower down on the totem pole than you, as it were. She's a waitress. Who knows? Maybe she's a student. Who knows what she is? But you're completely, the girl was like in tears or something. You know, it's a terrible thing to do. He reveals so much to me. Thank God he's married now with a couple of kids. It is something to look out for. And even in dating, it really, really is. Says the Rambam by Maimonides, source number 2, and this comes to the laws of conduct, that those who frequently become angry, we're going to see everyone becomes angry sometimes, okay, so don't worry about it, have no quality of life in Judaism. Therefore, say the sages, we are instructed to distance ourselves from anger to the farthest degree. Now, this is interesting, because this is, trust me when I say this, this is unlike the Rambam. The Rambam has a general rule when he teaches anything, always to take what he calls the golden mean, the middle path. He says there are extremes in life, and we Jews, he says, are not extremists. And if you see a Jew who is an extremist, they're probably making a mistake. Now, to be fair, it depends where you are, right? Because the person to the right of you is a crazy extremist, the person to the left of you is like a non-Jew, right? That's how we all like, judge each other, which is not a good thing, obviously. But he says, generally speaking, when it comes to character traits, there are extremes. You can't be too giving with your money. There is something called too giving. And you can't be too stingy. You've got to be in the middle. You can't be too happy all the time, right? It looks like you're on, I don't know, crack or something, right? And you can't be always depressed, but there's somewhere in between. A little somber, a little happy, a little serious. You've got to find the balance. And he goes through all the characteristics like that. And by the way, saying that the extremes have value, but you've got to kind of work out the middle golden mean. And then he comes to anger. And another trait, which we're going to talk about later on, which is related to anger, it's actually the root of anger we're going to come to at the end of the class, so my punchline, so I'm going to hold on for a moment, if you don't mind. And he says, no, anger is at a limit. You've got to take that trait, and you're going to have to push it somewhere else. It's such a bad trait. We're going to see the sources that he bases his comments upon, that you're going to have to really, and he says, the analogy this uses, imagine you have a sapling. Have you seen those like young trees? And it's bent over. How do you get the sapling straight up? So they tie it nowadays. But sometimes we have to bend it the other way in order to bring it back up like to center. You know what I'm saying? It's like something bends that way, you got to bend it the opposite direction. So is anger, he says. So is anger. You're going to have to really bend that tree because it's something which can consume your entire life. You can become an angry person. Even if you're happy or doing around, inside, that's what you are. Okay? Until a person acts as though, these are the words of the Rambam, don't argue with me, until he does not sense even those things that would justifiably anger a person. Come, like a blade of grass floating in the wind, this will not upset me whatsoever. That seems to be the idea of the Rambam. I want to just say something I mentioned last week, which contradicts this. I'm going to have to find a solution. We'll think about it together. And that is every trait, every negative trait has a positive. God doesn't just make certain characteristics. If there is a negative, there must be a positive that comes with it. Okay? So what's the positive anger? Is there something that can be positive in the character of anger? And we're going to see that there is something very small, but it is not internal in any way, shape, or form. We're going to see there are times when a person will need to show anger as a tool in order to make an impact. But we're going to see that inside, you're going to be completely calm and good. There is one chair over here and one right in front, Sivan, my darling. Come on down. Right, middle row. And this is your friend. She can sit right behind you and massage you in the back. Have you got it? Yeah. Don't worry. It's all good.
Sorry.
It's only because you, Sivan. It's only because you love you so much over there. You know that. And it's pretty much known what anger does to a person. It destroys all relationships. People who are angry, says the Orchat Tzadikim, and who reinforce their rage are unaware of what they do. You don't even know the consequence of what your anger does. And they do many things in their anger that they would not do when they're calm. For anger causes one to think irrationally and speak out. Now, one of the main things that's going to be, I'm going to have a class on this later on, is the concept of Lashon Hara. And speech is going to be one of the most powerful tools that come along and are used when a person is angry. And by the way, speech in Judaism is seen as a real killer. Right? Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words really do kill you. An angry person does not find favor in the eyes of people. People don't like them. Okay? And it destroys families. This character trait, if you don't work on it, at least take the edge off it before you get married, by the way, because marriage magnifies, I didn't mention this last week, but you know my obsession with marriage. Marriage magnifies character traits. If you were happy before, you become really happy. If you have a little of anger, you become really angry. Right? Everyone carries a little bit anyway. So for some reason, I don't know why, but you're inside that goldfish bowl that is married life, and it's just you two, right? After the big wedding and the party and all the gifts, and it's just you two. That's why, by the way, jokes aside, I don't always recommend people go on honeymoons right after their weddings. People do that. Right, like, I don't know, in the movie, they're led during the wedding. What's up with that? Like, they leave the church, there's a car outside with cans on it, and off they go. Okay. But even like the next day, I'll tell you why. Sometimes when you go from that euphoria, it's a side point, but it's interesting. When you go from that euphoria of this wedding, it's all about me and the money and the family and all the stress, and it's just you two, you like, turn up on vacation, you're like, now what the heck do we do? Alien abduction? I don't know what we're going to do now. It's like, suck me up. I don't know what to do, right? That's my alien abduction impersonation, by the way. I'm working on it. I've got a routine I'm working on. By next week, I'll have a whole routine on that one. So, I was actually abducted by something. So, right, honeymoons could be, I know many people who, and it sounds weird, who get into a lot of arguments on honeymoons. Like, is this the way it's meant to be? If not, that's in the first year of marriage. It can be very, very stressful. It's worth preparing beforehand, and it can rip apart families. So much, says the Talmud, that don't be surprised if you see murder happening because of anger. And that's the Talmud in Gittin. Someone who creates an atmosphere of fear in their household due to angry outbursts is likened to a murderer. Sounds a little extreme, but let Rashi explain. And he says that people will flee from that person's presence with such panic that they will not look where they are going and might fall into a pit or off a bridge. In those days, that's what it was like. However, we call the modern day equivalent road rage. And here, a nice little article from the New York Times. A bond driver instructor resigns over accident of road rage. Page 2. A driver's ed teacher resigned after he was accused of having... But no one really got hurt in this. This is a very funny story. He resigns after he was accused of having a student driver chase down a motorist who had cut them off and then punching the man. Imagine that. So you teach this guy how to drive. You get kind of like, follow that guy! Chase him! We're bringing him down! Now, left faster! But a great teacher. Catches up with him and drags him out and beats into a pulp. I mean, I guess it's not really funny at all. But in hindsight, I guess. What can I say? I'm a rabbish. I laugh at that kind of stuff. I apologize. And obviously people said, here's a guy who's a very good teacher. He does something less than wise. We're very concerned about the country school system. Losing your good teacher. I don't know. Is that a good teacher? I don't know. And just to mention, you jump down. The National Highway Traffic Safety estimates that 1/3 of all fatal car crashes, in which 41,000 people die each year, could be attributed to road rage. Right? 1/3 of that. It's crazy stuff, right? And I've been in as well. Right? You're sitting in traffic and you want to just like start biting the steering wheel, right? It drives you crazy. It really builds up, you know? I have certain techniques that I use, I do this driving sometimes. You're on the GWB, you're stuck in the traffic, or in Manhattan, the crazy driving, and the crazy tax drivers, and not me. I'm a crazy driver. You see my cars, got dents everywhere. It's really, you got to really be very, very careful. Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper. We have the outside shell. Let's go inside a little bit more. There is a very famous story from the Torah about someone called Moses. I give you that. And his reason for life was to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, to receive the Torah, and then to go to Israel. That's really what he was all about. If you want to really summarize what Moshe Rabbeinu was about, he was about going to Israel. You should know that he prayed hundreds of times, right, just to be allowed to get into Israel, to the point where God said, stop praying. It's not a class on prayer, but it's worth knowing this. Stop praying, because if you pray one more time, I'm going to have to let you in. So why was he not allowed in? What happened? So there was an incident you may have heard of called the rock that was meant to bring it forth water. That's my biblical voice. Great, bring water. And he was meant to speak to the rock. And instead, he hit it with a stick, with his staff. His staff, by the way, the whole class just on the staff is a very, very special and mystical reality that had various names of the tribes, actually. It was made of sapphire. So the story has a lot of depth to it, but he hits the rock. And everyone agrees that was the reason why he was not allowed in. There's a difference of opinion. What's wrong with that? I mean, I look in the Torah, and I've yet to find a law that says, thou shalt not hit rocks. Right? I've seen it before. Right? Rock treatment. I'm sure there's people, Jews out there protesting, save the rocks, save the rocks. Right? There's always a Jew out there protesting about something. But in this case, it's an unusual one. So my opinion is that he could have made a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, sanctification of God's name, because had he done this with a rock, people said, wow, rock, listen to God, how much more so should we? Okay. One of the commentators, though, says something very interesting. He says, He lost his temper. I mean, dealing with like 3 million Jews in a desert with no water. Can you imagine the complaining? Don't have to imagine, you can read about it in the Torah itself, right? And the Jews complained. They complained about the food. And it's hard to believe the Jews complained about food, right? But they did. And they got, and Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, God should forgive me for saying this, but this is what the commentators say. He lost it. He lost it. And he hit the rock out of anger. It was that particular sin that did not allow him to go to Israel. And once again, this doesn't mean he was rejected from birthright. Right? This means his whole reason for being alive was to fulfill the Torah in the holy land of Israel, and that was rejected. And it seems out of proportion. However, when a person of that caliber, and we have to realize this, as well as parents or teachers or employers or employees, when people look up to us and we lose our tempers, it reflects badly not only upon us, but upon who we represent. Okay? For example, one thing I do not want to see, which thank God I have not seen so far, is President Obama losing his temper. Okay? The last thing you want to see is the guy or girl who has their thumb on the nuclear button lose on television. You did what? Right, like, bring me that football right now. Right, where's that? You know, I won't come. President of America, I don't care what they're throwing at you, I want it to be ba 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 ba. So they want to destroy us, I don't want to control, and that's all good. I want calm. I don't want angry, because if he loses it, I'm going to freak out. So they have to work on this. I'm sure inside they're going absolutely crazy. So I mention that because first of all, you see how bad anger can be, that you could lose your life's mission because of it. Now remember, we're not judged up to that level. People like Moshe Rabbeinu and the great sages and female leaders are definitely held to a higher standard. And it seems unfair, I admit. However, they reach that level of their own volition and their own effort, and they have to pay with the responsibility that comes with that, and so to us. Says Yor HaTzadikim, this other commentator, not only does it do that, it actually denies a person all good things. Have it on page 2. A person who is angry does not have a compassionate heart towards the poor. Anger prevents a person from having intent when he prays, those who do, and the divine presence cannot rest on someone who is angry. It's a well-known fact that before the Jewish prophets, you know, we used to have in the old days Jewish prophets, although, as I mentioned before, the Jewish people are no longer a prophet organization. Right. So the old days when the prophet wanted to prophesy, they would actually sometimes, and King David was famous for doing this, because he was a great prophet, they would play musical instruments in order to calm themselves, to remove all anger from their heart. Because you cannot be a receptacle for God's message in this world, whatever that means, right, to us even today, unless you've worked on that particular character trait, and they would bring you music. That's why, what's the image they use for King David? The harp. Right? I mean, the modern electric guitar, I don't know what it was. But that was what it was. Why? So you used to have a harp at the window, they say, and during the night the wind would come in and blow, and he would get up and he would study and he would teach whatever he was doing. But also they say, before he went to prophesy, he would have people play the harp, so he would be in a very, very good mood. Music works like that, by the way, a very powerful tool. An angry person cannot learn or accept constructive criticism. So we all know people like that. Because nobody will be willing to reveal his failings out of fear of that person's fury. You want to say something? I'm sure you've all had a boss like this once. You have a boss like this right now. You want to say something to them and say, well, maybe you shouldn't get the swastika tattooed on your back. Whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? And they go, what? Right? They completely freak out. It's very hard to give them even really good constructive criticism. In Judaism, we really value, we're going to see later on in the course, constructive criticism. The way you give it's important. How you give it, that's going to be a question. We'll work out later on. Even if someone rebukes them, they won't accept it out of their anger. In short, a person who habitually gets angry cannot achieve anything positive unless they dispel the anger from their heart. It says in Pirkei Avot, one of the great Jewish sources, it's actually a Mishnah, so it goes way, way back, and it's got basically teachings from the different sages on what these little ideas and principles they lived by. So one of the commentators says over there, if you want to, you can divide all the people in the world into four categories. Chop up all the people in the entire world and put them to one of four groups. You have some people who get angry very, very quickly, but they calm down very quickly. And you have some people who get angry slowly, but they calm down slowly. And then you get some people who get angry quickly, calm down slowly, and some people get angry slowly and calm down quickly. Right? So you have the four types. By the way, which is the best? What's the best?
Get angry slowly,
calm down quickly. And what's the worst?
Get angry fast
and slow to calm down, right? Interesting. I think the Mishnah, if I remember correctly, calls the person who gets angry slowly, calms down quickly, like a tzaddik, a righteous person. But the commentators say, well, we need four groups. There should be five groups. Why isn't there a fifth group, which is what, Adele? The person who does not angry at all. No such person. No such person. Doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. And if you do find someone who has that, that person has reached that level where they are at complete peace with themselves. And that is a level a person can reach. But naturally, no. Now you're able, the fact they give you four types, you're able to jump around to different groups. It's something you can work on. And I hear this a lot from people. They say, Rabbi, what are you saying? It's natural. I'm an angry person. If you had my boss, and if you did what I did, and I hear their stories, and I can't help but agree with them. However, there was one incident that happened to me that taught me very different. I'm going to share the story with you, if you don't mind. A number of years ago, I was walking down a main street, it's actually in England, and I saw there were two cars were playing, I don't know, we call in England, playing chicken with each other. Is that they do that, one in front of the other? So one was a very, very big car with tinted windows, and the other was a very small car, like a little sporty thing. And it was like backwards and forwards, stopping, starting, and eventually it caused a big crowd, right? And people are watching this, and obviously, you know me, I'm a nosy person, I see what's going on. There's some, you know, reality TV live action there. So watching these cars, whoop, 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 and eventually the small car cuts in front of the big one and blocks him off. And the guy gets out of the car, and he is crazy mad. I mean, red face, bulging veins, the whole thing, right? Goes into the trunk of his car, and he pulls out a cricket bat. Let me translate, a baseball bat, flatter. And he's swinging it around, going crazy, screaming. And he goes, come out, you guys! He's really shouting his car, and I'm like, whoa. I wish they'd have, like, cell phones now. I wish they'd invent them so I could actually film this, you know? I don't really think that. And so, the other car, nothing happened. Slowly, the doors open, I think all four of them at the same time, and out of this car comes four of the biggest people I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I don't get bigger. I'm saying, this is like, these are like mountains. And all in suits, and so they get out, and they start walking towards this guy very slowly, and there was a sudden and very quick change in him from to, he walks over to them. Oh, guys, I'm sure we can discuss this. He cleans a little bit of lint off their jacket, puts it down a little bit, you know. They said, yeah, you're fine. They slap on the face a couple of times. gets back in the car and drives away. And I thought about that a while later when I discussed it with one of my teachers, when I told him that story, and he said, where did the anger go? Where was it? There it was, screaming, shouting. Had it been a 15-year-old kid or 16-year-old kid in the car, you would have turned them into mincemeat. But the anger went. Oh. So there's a motivation. When there's a motivation, you're able to work on it. When there's a motivation, when there's not a motivation, seemingly not. But we have the power. We just have to dig very, very deep. Says the Talmud, there are people who tear their clothes in anger or break things, I've done that before, or scatter their money in rage, not Jews. And when they do that, they're like, what? I'll take that one back. When they do this at the Talmud, a very strange thing about this, it's actually pretty self-evident, a very extreme comment. It says, though, says the Talmud, they've worshipped idols. Now, that comment is not thrown around too quickly in Jewish thought. Worshipping idols? First of all, what's the connection? But is it really that bad? I mean, sounds familiar, worshipping idols, Second Commandment. Still, I don't mean American idols, right? I mean, like, you know, the real idols, we actually bow down and invest the power in these things. We don't really have idol worship nowadays. But still, it's a very, very powerful comment. And why would it be? Why that? Right? Why would it be like, I mean, the murder thing, like, hey, you get angry, it can cause murder. Also, you get angry with the person, you've killed the person to some degree. Okay, so you hear physically and metaphorically about the murder comparison. But what's up with worshipping idols? And it brings down a verse to prove that. It says in Psalms that there shall not be a foreign god among you. You shall not bow down for an alien god. It was an alien god. And they say this is the power of the Yetzer Hara, the inclination to do bad. So why is that? So I found a beautiful answer from a deeper source. This is Rav Shneur Zalman Liadi, the Tanya. And he says like this. He says, anyone who gets angry is considered to as though worship idols. And the reason for this is that when a person is enraged, they lose a lot of their faith. Because you're taking control of the situation yourself. See, naturally, we should have faith in God, faith in each other, faith in the world. But when you get angry, you take control. And I'm thinking about it now. One of the things I used to do before I started working here, I don't do it anymore, but I got a qualification. I used to work with drug addicts. And I was actually one of the few people working with a team, Jewish teens in this area. I was part of an organization called JAKS, Jewish Alcoholic, Cannabis Dependence and Significant Others, an excellent organization. Check them out, jacksweb.org, fantastic one. They do these retreats. So I went along a number of times, a rabbi in training, then they promoted me. It's a voluntary organization, but a fantastic one. And one thing they always said is that addicts, by definition, have control issues, and with that comes anger problems. It's interesting. Why is a whole discussion? There's books and books written on this, many books. And if you want, I could recommend some titles for you. But they have this idea that when you think you're in control, which you're not, because God's in control, and when you don't let go of that, anger takes its place because you think I should be in control. Can you hear? So it ends up becoming a lack of faith. That's how it seems to come together. For he would believe that everything comes to him from God. He would not be angered at all. And if you think everything that happens for a reason. Now stop for 1 second if you don't mind. Let's discuss this. There is another book which I didn't bring down over here, the Sefer Chinuch, and he brings out a wild comment on this idea. It's a very famous idea, but he says like this. He says, if you understood that everything that happens to you in this world happens for a reason, everything. And the example, which the famous example is, you go into your pocket and you want to take out a quarter, and instead you bring out a dime, right? It's annoying, right? And it's not up there. I mean, for some people, maybe that's a big freak out, unfortunately. But for most of us, it's tough, and you go back in. Right? I'm trying to find your keys, right? Which always move around by themselves for some reason. Because I promise you, I never left them there. I speak to my wife about that one. Right? Drives her crazy. Me, I'm like, where are they? Where did you leave them? If I knew I left them, I knew where they'd be now. Right? It's tough. Everything that happens, however, happens for a reason. There is no coincidence in this world. Let's take that to the next phase now. Let's go a little deeper into that. And he says, when someone does something to you, don't think that's them doing it to you. I mean, to some degree it is. And if they did something wrong to you, they will be, quote unquote, punished for it or taken to task for it. That's their own personal spiritual accounting. But why it happened by them and happened to you at that time is because God decided it should. And that could be a hard pill to swallow. But in order to grow, there needs to be a bit of resistance. Right? You grow your muscles, as we said, with some resistance, yeah? And you grow, health-wise, by exercising, right? Or by refraining from bad foods, whatever it is. There has to be resistance, so too spiritually. And God will, that's what the Chinuch says, based upon this idea, He will send you certain things during the day to nudge. Now, by the way, what you want, as a side point, is lots of things. You realize that? If you want to have problems, the greatest thing you can have is lots of problems. Why? Because if you have one problem, it's going to be a big thing that completely consumes your life. You understand? Think about a big problem you've had, everything else falls away. You want little small things to irritate you, right, to help you grow, but if a big thing comes to you, therefore we're constantly watching out for these things and saying, well, I mean, it's hard to do. And at the time it happens, you maybe not expected to, but when these things happen, like, maybe this is for a reason. So when the guy cuts it, I mean, it's a real way of thinking. It's a whole different way of thinking. I'm not at this level, unfortunately, but I've met people who are able to, at that moment or just afterwards, put thought into it, and maybe that guy who cut me up, maybe I need to go through that pain right now. Maybe there's some deficiency in me. I don't know what it is, but maybe it happened for a reason. Maybe there is no coincidence. So maybe the situation is not about him, it's about me. And if it ain't about him, then why am I getting angry with him? He's just an idiot. Yeah? So that takes a level of faith and emunah. Okay. Furthermore, even at the very moment the person curses or strikes, he receives his strength from God, who constantly gives him life and existence. So this is really, we get our power from this. And there's a very interesting analogy given by a great Kabbalist, Rabbi Yosef Gittilia. And he says, so what is anger like? And he says, anger is unique among the character traits, because unlike the other traits that we have to work on, this one is like a unlocked doorway before a thief. An unlocked doorway before a thief. In other words, if you want to know what the portal that opens you up to all other traits, whether it's revenge, whether it's hatred, whether it's lashon hara, speaking bad about other people, if you're able to work on this one, it's as though your gate is closed and locked. But he says, once you open up the gate, then the other traits, which are negative, are able to come out, to follow it, or get in. That's how you look at it, yeah? And he says anger is that thing. Anger is the lock on the door. Otherwise, you've unlocked the door and the thief gets to get, thief is able to get in. And this is one of the things I used to hear when I first came. That's why I call the talk, at least on the sheet, "You Make Me So Mad." That's a very American expression. Have you heard that before? So I came here, like, I'd be talking to someone, I'd do something, like, "You make me so mad." That's my American accent, by the way. "You make me so mad." And it's a very American thing. I never heard such a... I was like, that's a good expression. "You make me so mad." And I was, 1 second. I don't make you mad. You make yourself mad. What are you blaming me for? I just said something. Right? It's like the whole expression itself is saying, you are making me mad. But that's not a Jewish viewpoint. The Jewish viewpoint is, you yourself make yourself mad. You have a choice. You can make a decision whether you want to allow this thing to get inside you or not. And sometimes, and some people are professionals at getting you to get angry. They know the exact buttons to press. Children are trained in some secret school which we have yet to find, but it must exist, exactly which button to press, how to press it, and when to press it. And when it comes to kids, God bless them. I mean, I'm better than my wife, thank God, but me, wow, it's tough stuff, it really is. And working on this trick where you have kids is highly advisable. So how am I going to do it? So Rabbi, give me some practical tips over here. Do the rabbis, Jewish history, all this time, have any good practical tips? And the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, perhaps one of the greatest Kabbalists that ever lived, wouldn't realize, has a commentary on the Torah, a very famous one. But he also has a letter that he wrote to his kids, right? Because everyone wants to have wonderful, beautiful Jewish children who follow in their footsteps. So before he died, and this is actually a common thing people used to do, maybe still do, I don't know, they write letters to their children. Yeah? Maybe people used to die young then as well, and before they'd see them grow up, maybe. And he wrote this letter called the And You Buy This Probably, it's a beautiful letter. It's very short, and it's like learned by people. There's a lot of stuff in there. It's actually a book. Art Scroll published a version with a commentary by, I think, Rabbi Foyer, and well worth reading. So he starts off this letter, like, this is the big advice I'm giving my kids before I die. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, deathbed confessions are usually the biggest ones. And he says to them, accustom yourself to speak gently to all people at all times. This will protect you from anger, a most serious character flaw which causes a person to sin. Once again, it itself is bad, but it's also the door that opens to other negative traits. Okay, so what's the advice over there? And I actually tried this, and you can try this as well. First of all, you feel angry, you should whisper. Okay, just try speaking very low. It actually calms you down, the loud voice. And when someone shouts at you, whisper back. Right? Just keep your voice very, very low. Just the escalation of voices. So that's it. Speak gently all the time to all people. By the way, I've taught this class many times, and for some reason, God tests me the next day and makes me get angry, and I usually do. So stay away from me tomorrow, is my advice. Let's just be honest about it, okay? Because I'm going to lose it somewhere and somehow. So don't push me. Okay, says the Rambam, this is a different person, this is Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon. He says there are certain character traits that one must distance himself from the extreme, and it's forbidden to take a standard approach to the middle path regarding these traits. Anger is an extremely negative trait, and it's forbidden to distance himself completely. Train yourself to become never so angry, even regarding things where anger may be justified. So where is anger, like, a little bit justified? I mentioned before, where's the positive? So I'll give you an example. I'm sure there's more, but I'll give you one example where anger is a good thing. Anyone think of a time when anger is a good thing?
Injustice.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay. Well, who's meeting out the justice? You probably want to be calm when you meet it out. Maybe war, actually, I think about that. I mean, you want to be in control, even in that circumstance, I guess. So I'll give you one example. It's a small example, but it's an important one. Let's say you're walking around with your 2-year-old starts to walk, and you say to your kids, don't go into the street. Okay? Do not go into the street. Okay? And you walk along, and it's going to happen. Heaven forbid it happens. You walk along, and they look at their hand, and boop, they're out of the street. Okay? Now they're very, very young. Okay? They're not going to understand the concept of, look, streets are dangerous places. Trucks are big. You small. Make road pizza out of you. Right? 2-year-old's like, Mom, Dad, that's a great point. I never thought about it. 2 years old. And I have like a conversation about it. What do you say? Naughty, naughty child. Never do that again. You get fucky, fucky, you took us. Don't do that. That's my name, right? Naughty, naughty. Don't do that again. That's what I'm going to say. Now, let us put a little caveat over here. Okay? That display of anger, which is the right time. I heard from a great thinker recently. I asked him about this. And he said, anything that endangers a child's life, you should show anger to. Anything that endangers a child's life, that you can show anger. However, it's got to be pure exterior. Again, God wouldn't create something called anger without having a positive purpose. There are times he needs to get a message across. Okay? And in that sense, it's pure. But inside, there's a famous story of a great teacher who had a student who was acting up and did a terrible, terrible thing. And the teacher didn't mention anything, didn't mention it at all. And then 2 weeks later, approached him and told him off about it. And he's like, Rabbi, it happened 2 weeks ago. He's like, it took me 2 weeks to get the anger out of my heart to be able to speak to you about it as a normal person. Because had I approached you a week later, I would have killed you. Right? So he said, what you're seeing now is anger, but it's pure exterior. Inside, I'm calm. Right? I'm jelly. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nothing. Or jello, what do you call it? I'm calm as anything, yeah? Okay, let's get to the punchline of it. There's another trait that the Rambam and others connect to. Oh, there's another piece of advice here. Rav Rovol, be a great scholar. His daughter-in-law was actually my shatran with my wife. He put us together, and he says a person should train themselves. The things you could do, and you can pick this up in any good store. You know, various things to do. There's meditation, calming techniques. You know, it's really, really obviously a good thing. And anxiousness obviously leads to these things. It's all good. What's the other trait? So there is another trait that goes hand in hand with anger, and I guess could be the root of this, but if you have one, you're usually suffering from the other. So if you can't work on the anger issue because it's too difficult, then you work on this other one, and then things get better. So what's that? So that trait, says the Shlach Kadosh, in a letter that he wrote, he says, words of the wise spoken gently are accepted. Someone who has acquired the trait will never become angry. Again, once again, be calm and speak. And he says, this meaning of speaking gently is that a person does not speak with arrogance. So there seems to be this connection, which the Rambam makes as well, between ego problem and anger. People who get angry usually have ego issues going on as well. Okay? They could be having low self-esteem issues as well, but generally speaking, even that, interestingly enough, may be connected. Let me explain what I mean. What is ego? It sounds like ego is a good thing, right? No. A good thing is good, healthy self-esteem. That's seen as a positive trait, but ego is not. Ego is, it's all about me, and it's me, 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 and don't tell me what to do. So if you approach these people who have power, for example, and they lose it, what they're actually doing is the anger has come from their ego problem, because who are you to talk to me like that? So go back to the story at the beginning. She's in the restaurant, and the waitress comes along and spills the wine. So she's like, do you know who I am? Like, do you know who I am? Hey, you got no idea. That's really, she doesn't actually say that, but that's really what she's saying. It's coming from a place of ego, and that's a problem. People who are arrogant will have it. Had it been a multimillionaire or her boss, same cup of wine, same dress, she probably wouldn't have lost it. It's people who are lower down the totem pole. I always tell people on dates to look out for this, how they treat people lower than them. When they go to the parking lot and they give their ticket, and you always say to those people, you know, I'm waiting a bit, and they say it loudly, I waited 10 minutes for my car, and I've got nothing at all. You know what? You know, what are they saying? You know who I am? You know who I am? You're a little pishka. Get on with it, buddy. See, it's the ego they have on that person that leads to the anger. Fine. So what's the solution to ego? What's the opposite trait of ego? Humility. And humility is seen as the greatest trait among all the traits. Now, once again, if ego, right, is not having good self-esteem, then humility is not having low self-esteem. Ergo, that would be the obvious conclusion. People who have low self-esteem are doing a terrible thing and a disservice to themselves. Humility, however, is, I'm great. You know what? I'm a great teacher, I'm a great a business person, lawyer, doctor. You can say that. You're expected to say that. However, you say, I've got a lot more to learn. I'm grateful what I have. And it's all given to me by God. And I am the greatest painter that ever lived. You can be humble and still say those words. Interestingly enough, at the end of the Torah, Moses is described one way and one way only. The humblest person that ever lived. That's the only description we get at all in Scripture about Moshe Rabbeinu, about Moses. He's not called the most charismatic. He's not called the greatest orator. We're not so impressed by that. And he had a lisp. He probably wasn't as well. Actually, that's one of the reasons, say the commentators, that he was given a lisp to help him work on his humility. But by the end, he becomes the perfect receptacle for his anger issues. It's a very interesting story. I mentioned as a side point. You may be interested by this. It says that Pharaoh, and the Midrash says this, that Pharaoh wanted to know what Moshe Rabbeinu was all about. What was his character really all about? So he sent people to draw his face, bring back those drawings, and he had experts who had the ability to decipher a person's personality by looking at their face. There is an area of Kabbalistic study, interesting enough, the Zohar, called Chachmat HaParzuf, right? The wisdom of looking at a person's face. So these Egyptians had the same power that they could. I mean, we have it instinctively. We look at a person's face and we think, wow, that's a Jewish face, right? We sometimes have this like way of looking at a face and saying, oh, you know, this is like, so you, or that person's character. Women have it more than men, interesting. They have a more of a deeper ability to access information. Right? Many times I'm like, this guy's great. My wife is like, don't go near that guy. But he still wants to give us money. No, he doesn't. Right? So he sends off these people off the post, and he come back, and these experts look at it. They look at these drawings of these artists, and they're like, no, he can't be the leader of the Jewish people, because this guy's got major problems. He's got anger issues. He's got this. He's got that. And he lists off all. So he met them. He said, go back. Must have been, he didn't do good enough, and did more drawings of Moshe Rabbeinu's face, and they brought these drawings back to Pharaoh, and he looked at these, and the experts said, same stuff. It can't be. They say that later, Moses and Pharaoh met, as you know, and Pharaoh, in the Midrash says, approached Moses and said to him, you can't be the leader of the Jewish people. You have all these character things. And he says, you're right, I do, but I've worked on them. It took me time, but I conquered them. I am naturally an angry person. That's what Midrash says. I am naturally one of these people, but I've worked at it, and now I've worked on my humility. Right? It brought me down. And remember, this is the Moses who had a reason to be arrogant. Right? He's the person who got the whole Jewish thing going. Well, in some degree, yeah? He spoke to God face to face. He brought the Torah from the heavens down to us for all eternity. That's a pretty big job. I don't care how big a doctor or lawyer are. That's pretty impressive. Yet he's considered the humblest person. That doesn't mean he's a schmatter. That means he put his life into perspective. So let's just recap through the major points. We started by saying that if you want to judge yourself or others, you look at a person's anger. It's a very, very good way of seeing what another person or yourself really cares about. What you get angry about means what matters most to you. Yeah? What makes a person, say to a person, what makes you mad? What makes you angry? Right? And that will be a good indication of what they're about. Then we spoke a little about the idea, it's called the inner teacher. There's something you can learn about yourself and about others. The Rambam says it's extreme. Bend it the other way. Okay? We said it can even cause murder, heaven forbid. Yeah? And we saw that road rage is a modern example of using a very dangerous weapon to kill many, many people. We spoke about Moses. Even the great Moses had anger issues, right? He hits the rock, doesn't get into Israel. And we spoke about four types of people. And we said there is no fifth type. We're all somewhere in that four. We're all trying to work it out. And then we said, you know what? It's even like idol worship. Why idol worship? Because you've given up your faith that God's in charge. And maybe this happened for a reason. It's about controlling anger. Speak quietly. Okay? You make me so mad. Take responsibility for your own actions. And then we finish by saying the greatest trait, humility, could end up being the antidote to this anger problem. We're going to stop over there. Any questions before you run out? Yeah? Just before you start, Lindsay, if you don't mind. In a couple of moments, I'm going to ask you all, if you don't mind, to go back upstairs. We have a member of the Knesset, a lady coming to speak. Not long, 10, 15 minutes. And our main funder as well is going to be here. You can come take now. Is going to be here as well. Now, we're going to see later, the internalized, great question. The answer is, it's not good to internalize. Judaism actually talks against it. One of the classes I think I'm giving next week is about revenge and bearing a grudge. And we're going to see that you're actually not allowed to internalize. You are expected, so you've got to come back for more. This is like a trailer. You've got to deal with the issue directly. Sometimes, however, it's just not dealable. Like the guy's in the car in front of you, you don't see the person again. There we go. Somehow, techniques. I listen to Torah tapes, not anymore. Torah on my iPod. I put a Torah class on. I'm like, I can lose my temper for listening to a Torah class. You know what I'm saying? So I'm always like, so that helps me personally when I'm right. And I don't speak to certain people to get me angry. That's very good, especially when I'm in a car. All right. Okay. Thank you all very much. See you all next week. Great job.